This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Woody Tosh, founder and chairman of Slow Money, a nonprofit formed in 2008 to catalyze the flow of investment capital to small food enterprises and to promote sustainable agriculture and the emergence of a restorative economy. Woody is author of the book, Inquiries into the Nature of Slow Money, Investing as if Food, Farms, and Fertility Mattered, and in 2010 was named by Utney Reader as one of 25 visionaries who are changing your world. Woody Tosh is here today to tell us about the accomplishments of Slow Money and to introduce the Soil Trust, a new nonprofit dedicated to rebuilding local food systems. Welcome, Woody.
Hi, Diane.
Perhaps we could start with a definition of slow money. What is slow money?
Slow money is, in the most practical sense, a network of investors and entrepreneurs and donors and farmers, just folks committed to steering investment capital to all the small food enterprises that are rebuilding local food systems around the United States. So that's the action. That's a bunch of people making, in the scheme of things, relatively small investments. There are a few larger ones, but mostly small investments all around the country to grain mills and creameries and compost companies and new organic farms, you know, everything that we need to rebuild local food systems. And in a more general sense, slow money has sparked just a broader conversation about fast money and capital markets and what the heck is going on in global finance and all the rest of it. So there's kind of a big discussion that we've sparked along the way.
Well, you've been alluding to this, but why have you chosen to focus your personal efforts on slow money? Why do you think it's particularly important?
I mean, to me, there isn't anything more important than this. I mean, our money is zooming around the planet in things that we don't understand. When I say we don't understand, not only we as individual investors barely understand it, but the money managers and the investment bank CEOs don't understand it completely either. I don't think at this point we need to go through the litany of examples of that, all the volatility and craziness and problems creating regulations at work and all the rest. And I'm not just talking about finance, I'm talking about the impact on culture. If the wealth that we've created in the 20th century, which is beyond historic proportions, in other words, creating 12 or 1,400 billionaires for the first time in the history of the planet, that wealth is now zooming around out of control, and I think it has very negative impacts that are not only tangible but also intangible on our culture and on our psychological well-being.
Would you elaborate on the slow money principles?
That's just a set of six tenets or axioms, or actually one of them is some questions. But it's just a brief statement of really the spirit of the book. It just turned out that the book was sparking so much, we wanted to simplify it. So people can go on the slowmoney.org website and see the principles. Some 24,000 people have signed them since we started. And it's really just a statement of a direction. The first one is we must bring money back down to earth. So you can see that they're fairly broad cultural statements. But they do act as a kind of an anchor, a vision that connects all of the investing that we're all doing together. It's kind of the why. Not really the what or the how, but it is the why.
What is the Slow Money Alliance, and what is your vision?
Well, the Slow Money Alliance is basically the group of people who've come together around the Slow Money principles and the vision. And as I said earlier, we're collaborating together to invest. So we now have 17 chapters, 16 of which are in the U.S., and as crazy as it may sound, one has just started in France. And the chapters are basically just clusters of people who are working together in a real way to start making local investments in food businesses, where in the last couple of years, things have really begun moving in a very significant way. So in the last couple of years, over $20 million has been invested in 170 small food enterprises. All except one are in the U.S. One happens to be in Switzerland. But this is the first significant, let's say, manifestation of the discussion of slow money. People have really started coming together in chapters and investment clubs. But they're basically small groups of people who are meeting on a regular basis at the local level to begin putting their money to work in this way.
Would you explain the difference between venture capital and what you call nurture capital?
Yeah, I mean, the phrase nurture capital just occurred to me at one point in contradistinction to venture capital. Venture capital is about, high tech, very rapid growth into billion-dollar market capitalization, market share of major international markets, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I think you can hear where I'm going. Nurture capital is about kind of the opposite, small, local. It's about fertility as opposed to profitability, et cetera. So it's kind of a general phrase, but it does help focus the mind a little bit on how different what we're trying to do is.
How do the investment clubs work, and to what extent is slow money investment philanthropy rather than straight investment?
That's a great question, and it's also one that we talk about a lot, the one about philanthropy versus investing, and that might lead us to talk about the Soil Trust a little bit. But, yeah, you can say slow money is on the boundary of philanthropy and investing. I think the most interesting way to frame it would be to say that our traditional notions of philanthropy and investing are kind of outmoded. They're kind of carryovers of industrial finance that was really invented in the 1800s and 1900s. And, you know, in this century, those distinctions aren't really quite valid. Krista Vreeland, who's a financial reporter who's on TV a fair amount as a commentator, she covers, you know, international economics, was on a Bill Moyers show recently. At the end of the show, she said, this is very recent, just the other day, she said, you know, we need some new ideas. The ideas of the 20th century don't really work anymore when it comes to finance and economics. Where are the new ideas? I think slow money is one of the new ideas because it is breaking down this idea of, you know, make as much money as you can, and then if you have a little bit of philanthropy, kind of clean up the mess. So you asked at the beginning of this how the investment clubs work. So I'll just say very quickly, the investment clubs are groups of people, generally up to around 20 people, who each put in the same amount of money, usually $5,000, and then vote on where the money goes. So if you think about it as just a small, mostly loan club, if you want to call it that, where a group of people are voting together on how to make small loans to farmers and small food entrepreneurs in their region. And your question about is it philanthropy or not, to be specific, we don't know what our rate of return is going to be. And I can at least speak for the Boulder, Colorado club, where I moved here this winter and joined the club that was already here, the Slow Money Club, Investment Club. And we all acknowledge we do not know if we're going to make money and how much money we're going to make. What we do know is we're making a series of low-interest, mostly non-secured loans to small food entrepreneurs, and we're doing it because we think it's critical to do it for the future of our community and the environment, and we believe long-term it will be a prudent diversification as an investment, but we can't really say what the arithmetic will be, and a hardcore traditional investor would say that sounds more like philanthropy, and my answer is fine, call it whatever you want, but what we know we're doing is we're providing capital to small businesses in our community that need the capital.
How is the concept of fiduciary responsibility different with slow money compared to fast money?
Well, that's a good follow-up just from that last comment. I mean, traditional, let's say, 20th century industrial fiduciary responsibility, if I can put all those labels on it, is about buying low, selling high, screening out as many of these so-called exogenous factors, these other factors that might impede the efficient flow of capital. So that means try not to worry too much about the workers and try not to worry too much about the environment. You know, if you're forced to, you take it into account. But basically, you're trying to just be an efficient steward of capital, meaning putting the capital in and getting it out as fast as you can and getting the highest financial rate of return that you can on the capital. That's fiduciary responsibility as we've come to know it. It doesn't sound all that responsible to me in the 21st century when we know we're bumping up against limits of all kinds, whether it be soil erosion or aquifer depletion or toxics in the food chain or carbon in the atmosphere or all the way to terrorism if we want to go all the way, which is saying indicators of social breakdown and, you know, cultural unrest, or the vast inequality of wealth, if you want to talk about the Occupy movement and the consciousness that that's raised. So I think a responsible steward of money, whether it be your money or someone else's money, has to take these things into account in the 21st century. And slow money is just a bunch of people, individuals, who generally agree with the direction I've just outlined and are working together to try to do it in a small way.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Woody Tosh, founder and chairman of the Slow Money Alliance. Our topic is the accomplishments of Slow Money and the Soil Trust, a new nonprofit dedicated to rebuilding local food systems. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. Would you say more about who is involved in the Slow Money Alliance?
Sure. It's not one kind of person, actually, and this is the beauty of it. It's everybody from so-called angel investors, meaning high net worth individuals who are used to making private investments, to family foundations, another category that's used to thinking about some of these issues. It includes entrepreneurs and farmers and just regular folks who have a few thousand bucks that they would like to take out of that, if you will, and put it into this. So it's a broad gamut. From a financial standpoint, it's pretty unusual that way. It's not just so-called accredited investors or sophisticated investors. It's everybody. And that creates a need for us to find creative ways for everybody to participate because everybody can't do the same kind of investing. And I sort of gave myself a segue to talk about the Soil Trust. If it's okay, let me just kind of go into that because that is why we've created the Soil Trust. The Soil Trust is a new nonprofit fund. We've just started spreading the word in the last week. And we have a lot to learn about how to get the word out properly on the internet and whatnot, but the basic idea is very simple. We've discussed the fact that there are 17 chapters and $20 million of investments and whatnot, but even if you don't live near a chapter or you don't want to go to meetings or you're just never going to write a check for $5,000 or $50,000 into a food enterprise, The Soil Trust is a way you can just contribute $50, a tax-deductible donation, take your deduction. We will put all those $50 together, hopefully a lot of them, and then we will invest that money alongside slow money investors around the country, and then the returns from those investments will stay in the fund. It's a permanent nonprofit fund. So returns from the investments will be recycled and reinvested. And we hope this will create a very powerful way for lots of small funders who want this all to happen, but as I said, are not in a position to write a check for $5,000 or $50,000 directly into one deal to participate. And it'll create a permanent vehicle that could really create lasting change over the next generation or two.
In what ways is the Soil Trust unique?
It's the only fund that we're aware of that is nonprofit, grassroots, and dedicated to local food systems. So there are a few other funds that use somewhat similar strategies, and the Acumen Fund and Root Capital, to be specific, raise money from foundations and angel investors, so large-scale investors, and they invest the money in developing countries in a socially responsible way, and then the returns stay in the fund. So that's, you know, slightly similar. Those are scaled. Those have $100 million or more under management and are looked at with great interest by institutions who are kind of interested in so-called impact or socially responsible investing. But the Soil Trust is set up specifically to work with lots of small donors. The grassroots participation is key for us. This is all about engaging what we hope will be up to as many as a million Americans in the process of rebuilding local food systems.
What criteria do you use in selecting enterprises for funding?
Mostly it's very organic, and this is something that distinguishes us in general from crowdfunding platforms. We have a network of thousands of people on the ground in different communities who are actually using their own time and money to identify and invest in local food businesses that they believe in their community. So we see this as a wonderful opportunity to link the power of crowdfunding to the knowledge of local investors. This will give us the opportunity to put the money that comes in through the internet from lots of people who want to be involved but, let's say, aren't able to be involved in any other way, to follow the knowledge of local investors. And I think this is really the best of both worlds. It's local and built on real relationships between people in the places where they live, and then it's using the power of the internet to enhance that.
What type of financial assistance do you offer to enterprises?
The financial assistance is fairly straightforward. I mean, it ends up taking the form of lots of small loans. Once in a while, it can be a donation. Sometimes it's assistance helping the enterprise not only, let's say, receive our capital, but work with other investors to get their capital. And then it depends on the people. Sometimes there's an opportunity to provide a lot of help in the business itself, putting together a board of directors or creating a business plan, that kind of thing. But we don't formalize that. That's all dependent on the people involved at the local level.
What fraction of the enterprises that ask for help are you able to fund?
I don't think we've been doing this long enough to have good data on that. So I'd have to really think about that in terms of giving you a number. I mean, we have one national meeting every year. The next one is April 29th and 30th, 2013, in Boulder, Colorado. And I'm mentioning that because at that meeting, approximately 30 food entrepreneurs from around the country will be invited to present in person to what is likely to be around 800 or so people from all over the country and from a few foreign nations. So there's one number, let's say 30 food entrepreneurs a year coming together in one national meeting. Then you have all the chapter activity, where there's a steady stream through the 17 chapters of local food entrepreneurs networking with, you know, the chapter participants, and that's hard to quantify. I mean, there are, let's say, scores of entrepreneurs, let's say, per year, per chapter. That starts giving you some idea of the numbers. And then we've invested in about 170. So over the last couple of years, that gives you some sense of what venture capitalists call the deal flow, just the number of entrepreneurs out there. But it's very clear to me from the few years that we've been doing this that there's lots of activity out there. You know, if you look at CSAs and farmers markets and niche organic brands and the rest, there's lots of activity. I mean, thousands and thousands and thousands of small food entrepreneurs around the country who are all starting to move in the same direction, and we're building the network of investors to support them.
Would you give us a flavor of the types of enterprises you have funded? What are some specific examples?
It's really everything that you would expect if you know something about local food systems. So it's everything from individual small and mid-sized organic farms to grain mills and creameries, local distribution and processing businesses. So, I mean, I can throw out a few random names if people would like to hear that, but Northern Girl is a vegetable processor in Maine. Maine Grains is a startup organic grain mill in Maine. Chatham Market was the refinancing of a food co-op in North Carolina. Cape Bay Valley Farm, which is a local food delivery service affiliated with some of the leading or more established CSAs in Northern California, small loans to individual producers to like buy a cold storage truck or build winter storage. You know, these are very small loans in the few thousand dollars a piece. We financed the expansion of a grass-fed and organic butcher shop in New York from its one store in Kingston, New York, to a second store in Brooklyn, New York. Online, there's some online stuff. There are examples of, you know, companies that are either providing online services to farmers or to consumers or to chefs, all connecting small organic producers to the market. There are some intermediaries, some small funds that are popping up to try to help investors, let's say, finance in a more portfolio fashion small farmers in the region, something called the Carrot Project in New England, very interesting. Last but not least, I guess I should say restaurants, you know, restaurants that source locally and organically, which is obviously, you know, important connector of consumers and producers. Rooftop garden, I'll say one more, just to give an idea of the range. Brooklyn Grange, I'm just popping into my head, it's a commercial organic farm of 1 acre on an industrial rooftop in Brooklyn. They've been doing it for quite a while, and they're trying to expand to a couple of other rooftops. So it's really a very wide range of small food enterprises.
You are listening to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Woody Tosh, founder and chairman of the Slow Money Alliance. Our topic is the accomplishments of Slow Money and the Soil Trust, a new nonprofit dedicated to rebuilding local food systems. What parts of the country have you focused on so far? You've mentioned several areas.
I hate that word focus. I'm just teasing. It's really kind of sprouted, forgive the word, organically. So the 17 chapters, leaving out the one that's in France, so the 16 are really scattered across the U.S. So we have Maine, New York, North Carolina, Austin, Texas, Boulder, Madison, Pacific Northwest, Bay Area and San Francisco, Central California, Colorado I left out, Boulder, and now Carbondale and likely Durango soon. So it's really where an individual or two step forward and really are able to play a little bit of an organizing and leadership role. These are all volunteers. We've been blessed with the quality of people that have stepped forward. Some of them have a lot of experience with investing and or philanthropy. Some are just very committed community members with a deep knowledge of the food system and wanting to see this happen. But we don't have a strategy for geographical expansion. It's really being pulled into the market by local leaders and energy where it pops up.
Well, you're still relatively new, but have the enterprises you have funded been successful overall?
I think the key to that is we're new. So there's an expression in the venture business which has a lot of slightly silly expressions. One of them is lemons ripen early, meaning when you make an investment, if it's not going to work, you usually find out fairly fast, and then it takes years for the ones that start to move forward to kind of, you know, find their way. We've had a few write-offs that I'm aware of, literally a few out of the 170, but we're way too soon to say anything statistically, you know, in terms of that. We're going to have to watch this for several years at least and collect all the data. I mean, I could say on the positive side that there are a number of ventures. Greenling pops into mind, a home delivery service in Texas, started in Austin, is now in several Texas cities, which is expanding, you know, very robustly. And, you know, there are many of the ventures that are perking along beautifully, but we just don't have any aggregated data yet on performance, just given the past, you know, we need a few more years to go by.
Would you comment specifically on the work of Slow Money in the Pacific Northwest? What projects are you involved in here?
Well, sure. Tim Crosby is our leader of Slow Money Northwest, and he's been involved in local food for quite a while in different ways. They've just set up something called the Farmer Reserve Fund, which anybody listening to this should check out. Go to slowmoneynw for northwest.org, and you'll see a nice website that describes what they're doing. But he's just working now with a credit union to provide loan loss reserves that will allow the credit union to build a small portfolio of food investments. There's also seven deals in the region that have gotten, I think it's about $4 million. The largest of them is a farm outside Portland, Oregon, called Community by Design, that one of Slow Money's members has financed at a fairly significant level with his own money. It's a 60-acre farm not too far from Portland that is basically serving as a new farm incubator for new organic farmers. And then there's a number of other small food enterprises. Willapa Hill Cheese is one that pops to mind that's gotten some money. But I would encourage listeners who want to find out more to go to Slow Money Northwest website for more details.
How would you summarize the accomplishments of Slow Money so far?
Well, you know, that someone looking at this can decide whether what I've just described is a fantastic beginning or a little blip. We're all trying to make sense of it ourselves. Here's a metric. If you look at the grant making by U.S. professionally managed private foundations, Gates being the largest and most obvious, and I mention it because it's in your region, but all the way down to all the small family foundations. If you look at the grant making that has been made from that roughly $600 billion of assets, only $50 to $100 million a year gets granted to sustainable agriculture. It's just barely on the map as an issue. There's so many other pressing things, poverty reduction and medical issues and disaster relief and education. And you know, there's just so many other things that foundations are called to do that the environment in general is not a big grant-making area, and sustainable ag within that is tiny. So if you take that $50 to $100 million a year and you look at that in the last 2 years, we've invested through so many $20 million, not to mention the fact that because we're investing as opposed to grant making, it's hard for a lot of foundations to do this. I would say that's a pretty good accomplishment. I mean, I certainly am very gratified. I consider it a great beginning. But, you know, the work ahead is to see if we can really maintain this momentum, bring it to more communities, deepen it, strengthen it, and through initiatives like the Soil Trust, create some lasting tools that will make it easy for more people to participate.
If you look in the long term, are you thinking of continuing to have your efforts be on small food businesses, or do you see it expanding to larger businesses as well?
The question of what's small and what's large is a corollary of the question of what's global and what's local, meaning what is local? Is it 50 miles, 100 miles, a watershed, a food shed, you know, et cetera? And the question of what's small and what's large, there's a lot of subjectivity in it. Is Stonyfield Farm Yogurt a small or a large company at $350 or $400 million a year? Is Butterworks Farm Yogurt at $1 million a year, all the yogurt that can be made on one farm in Vermont? One farm family, one herd, one farm. They grow their own feed, et cetera. That's $1 million business. Is that large or small? So this question is fascinating. I think the way we generally would frame it is, first of all, there's definitely no arbitrary answer to what's large and what's small, but we turn away from the global multinational corporation and look towards the small local business and want to apply our energy there. We know some of the businesses will scale. Some of the businesses may become national or multinational in the future if they become branded or come up with some new biopesticide that really takes off. But we're not concerned primarily with scale. We're concerned with, you know, looking towards the small. And the reason for this is important to state. It's because we believe that the economy and our culture needs lots of small, decentralized, healthy units at the local level if we're going to, you know, have a long-term healthy outcome.
What have been some of the key challenges for Slow Money?
Oh, there are too many of them to say. A, it's like anything new, making it work. You know, it's one thing to have an idea. It's another thing to bring it into the marketplace and have it work. We still have lots to learn about how this will play out long term. You know, we mentioned the question of financial returns before that we don't really know yet. So many things can affect that. I mean, the global financial markets can continue to be so volatile and crazy that people want to arrive at new benchmarks, new ways of thinking about investor success. That's a whole area that we are just one of many innovators in and where we have lots to learn as we go, how to measure our success both financially, socially, and environmentally. So that's one whole area that we need to learn. Just figuring out how to connect people in this age of, you know, between using the power of the internet, as I mentioned earlier, but to actually have it be built around real working relationships at the local level. I mean, this is very exciting stuff to me. To me, it's the best of both worlds. If we can pull that off, if we can learn how to do that, we can make a really lasting contribution, not just in the food system, but to finance in general.
You mentioned there was a Slow Money group in France. Do you see your Slow Money group expanding to other parts of the world as well?
That's, of course, impossible for me to say, other than that it's happening a little. As I mentioned, when we have our national gatherings, there are always people there from other countries. My book is coming out in China sometime in the next month or so. Who knows? Certainly the ideas are applicable beyond the U.S., but I live here. Most of the people in the network live here. I certainly feel strongly that the U.S., as the progenitor of fast food, if you will, as the inventor of industrial agriculture and the exporter of it in all of its glory, let's say, sorry if that sounds a little snide, I don't mean it to be, but let's say, you know, it has been a miracle of modern agriculture, and now we are also realizing that with the miracle comes long-term impacts that we didn't understand at the beginning, and we have to deal with them. So to me, the place to deal with them is at home. And we need to fix the system at home. There are so many main streets that are dying, or so many rural communities that are dying, surrounded by fields of monoculture for export and whatnot, that the idea that we would focus on helping developing countries grow food, well, yeah, of course, that's critical. But we can't do that without also fixing our system here at home and recognizing the long-term challenges that we have to deal with here.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Slow money. It's fun. It's interesting. It's different. It's rewarding. It takes some time and energy. It's not about giving your money to somebody else. It's about taking responsibility with your neighbors and putting some of it to work near where you live and things that you understand, starting with food.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Woody.
Thanks for having me, Diane.
You have just been listening to Woody Tosh, founder and chairman of Slow Money. For more information, check on the web at slowmoney.org and soiltrust.org. Again, that's slowmoney.org and soiltrust.org. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on Demand, and then Podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM and kexp.org.